This is On the Other Hand, a podcast sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas that explores politics and other issues of importance to Arkansans through conversations with community leaders. Stay with us as we talk to another leader in Arkansas who works across differences to get things done and to bring us closer together.
Hello, and welcome to On the Other Hand. I'm your host, Glenn White. I'm here with my co-host, April Chatham Carpenter, as usual. On our podcast, April and I interview community leaders in Arkansas who in some way work towards solutions across various political or other divides, or who in other ways somehow reach across various divisions within our community. Today, we have a repeat performer. April, tell them who it is.
Glenn, I'm very excited today. We're pleased to be spending time with Ryan Norris. Ryan's actually been a friend of Braver Angels for a bit, both the national and at the state level. Ryan is also the state director for Americans for Prosperity, Arkansas. Welcome to On the Other Hand, Ryan.
Thank you for having me back.
Ryan, I know you were one of our earliest interviews on our podcast, and we just have heard some good things about the work that you've been doing in the state of Arkansas, so we wanted to get you back on. So let's start, though, by having you tell us a little bit about your current work and what you view as some of the most important work that you're doing currently for those who might not know what you do.
Yeah, so Americans for Prosperity is a nonpartisan nonprofit that works in public policy, and simply put, for me, my main goal is to create an environment where more decisions are being made by you than are being made for you. And so this is a principle-based position that Americans for Prosperity has, which doesn't necessarily always put us in partisan camps all the time, and in fact allows us to create broad-based coalitions of individuals. And one of the things that we kind of focus in on, one of the little phrases that continually is in my mind, is when we're working on public policy, the bigger the we, the bigger the win. And so I try to find stakeholders from across the spectrum or across those the issues to develop the most robust solution that solves for the fears, the barriers that these individual stakeholders have. And so we try to model that on a daily basis here in the state of Arkansas.
That's wonderful. I know that Americans for Prosperity is seen as more of a red-hued endeavor in terms of its kind of history. I'm curious, this is more your thoughts. Are all of the states equally trying to do the bigger the we, the bigger the win kind of approach, or is Arkansas unique in that regard?
I would say that we're kind of the tip of the spear on that endeavor, and partially because at the time that I came in to Americans for Prosperity, there was this shift and this change. There was a dissatisfaction with the policy advancements or lack of policy advancements that were happening just through a partisan approach. And so the idea was there has to be another way of doing business for the people than just trying to get partisan majorities in so that each side could win, you know, winner take all kind of approaches. And in fact, Charles Koch, one of our founders, and Brian Hooks, our Stand Together CEO and president, wrote a book called Believe in People, where they actually talk about partisanship should be replaced by partnership approaches to public policy. And that influenced me very, very much. Additional to that, my personal philosophy comes from President Lincoln, where he said, you know, do I not defeat my enemies when I make them my friends? And that's my approach, is that I have friends across the political spectrum, and I'm not just transactional, but I want to understand what it is they care about, why they care about that, and I want them to convince me to care about it. I can then possibly find a solution to the problem that doesn't offend my principles or their principles as well, that can be done. They're not so far apart as humans and individuals that care about their community to not be able to find common ground if we take the time to get to know each other. Right now, everything seems to be in this loss aversion kind of thing. If somebody wins, I lose. That's not how public policy has to be created.
And how long have you been working here in the state of Arkansas?
I just finished up my full sixth year here in the state of Arkansas.
So during your time here, I'm curious where you kind of put our state in terms of its work on that partisanship, partnership kind of continuum.
Yeah. So overall, I think that there are some positives and some things that are not quite so positive. What I'm finding out, and the research is bearing this out, is that the public has exhaustion around politics. They say that 65% of Americans just feel exhausted by it, and particularly now as we're just starting the political season. We're about to hit the holidays where we have to be around our family and there's going to be political discussions. And you've seen massive falling outs around this. I believe the even Braver Angels in the 2016 period kind of came from all of that angst around those holiday parties and meetings where people lost friends and lost connection with family over political issues. And so this is still the thing. It's still there. That anxiety is still there. And then that nearly half of young people are asking for a different way of doing policy in politics and finding a way in which there can be less divisive and conflict-based approaches and more collaborative approaches that try to solve for the whole. And then the partnership challenge, the partisanship challenge, though, has become more and more granular. I think that when you look at 2016, up until the point of 2016, you still had kind of this R versus D, talking in political terms, red versus blue. But now there are shades of blue, and now there are shades of red. And it's getting worse and worse that even among the parties themselves, leaders are frustrated because they cannot organize enough momentum in their own parties to achieve goals. There's purity tests that no one knows where the criteria really is written down anymore on this. You know, that is leading to just exasperated people who see, again, we're about to hit up against another debt ceiling here on the federal level. And already individuals saying, well, this is what we're going to send you. And the other side saying, well, we're going to say no. And, you know, unless you do this and you have to do all of our stuff. And we're like, well, no, you have to do it all our way. And no one is working on behalf of the people when we have such big issues as inflation and the economy and world affairs that are going on that require them to work together. But the people want it. But for some reason, this system is not allowing that to happen because it has a different set of incentives. And so that is still there. The good news is that there is movement. There's bipartisan legislators here in the state of Arkansas. There's a group called the Arkansas Future Caucus that includes Senator Clark Tucker, Senator Breanne Davis, Representative Erin Pilkington, and Representative Jamie Scott. And this organization, the Arkansas Future Caucus, they are actively seeking ways to work together across the party lines. And Representative Pilkington and Representative Scott have put forward some great legislation that had broad bipartisan support, and then also have been in front of groups and organizations speaking together on how they're trying to do that work and what they would like to see citizens do to try to work together. So they're setting some really good examples. So there's the bipartisan legislators. You even have bipartisan legislation. I point to an interesting one in the 2023 session, House Bill 1429. Now, this is an interesting one because what it was, a bill that would allow unauthorized residents to acquire a limited driver's license that could not be used for voting and would allow them to purchase car insurance, identify themselves, prove that they've been paying their state taxes. And what was fascinating about this bill is that it's when we have this, you know, crisis at the border, we have very high emotions around the immigration issue. You had 8 Democrat sponsors and 3 Republican sponsors who actually sponsored the bill. And then it did get out of the Republican majority committee. And then on the floor, it failed. it failed. But when you look at the number of votes that were just non-voting, didn't vote at all, and those that voted yes, there was a majority of people either for it or potentially open to moving that legislation forward because they could understand the public policy, public safety concern on this, that, hey, if this is the federal government's messed up immigration, that's what are we going to do about that here to adjust? And we have individuals that do want to declare that they're here, that they're living here, and they would like to get car insurance. So if they hit you or you hit them and there's somebody at fault, that can be resolved. That just makes sense. Just makes sense. So that piece of legislation was very interesting to me as kind of one of those little bright spots, because it was very controversial, yet still you had Republicans coming alongside Democrats and work on that bill together. Nonprofit collaboration, I think, is also increasing. We're participating with the Central Arkansas Team Care for the Homeless. This has broad coalition partners, including the Salvation Army, Central Arkansas Library System. And our interest in this is to work with those who work with the less fortunate, the unhoused, those in poverty, and how can we potentially help craft policy that would be open to passage in a state like Arkansas that's very red, that in general doesn't view working on that as something that's their constituency. But when Arkansas has 26% child poverty and 18% overall poverty, that's an issue for everybody of every political persuasion. And we're seeing more of that. Also recently, you know, Americans for Prosperity, red-hued in the work that we do. We are being invited by blue-hued organizations to interact and engage. I was very honored to be able to have a short address to the NAACP chapter here in Little Rock and able to talk about the need for anti-indifference. You know, in general, what I see is that people do not work on things that they don't feel like they care about, or they're just indifferent to the needs of people they don't think are on their team. I think we need to change that mental model to one to where we're anti-indifferent, that when I see someone in need, my question needs to be, why are they in need and how can I help? As opposed to be like, they're in need, but they're wearing the wrong team colors, so I shouldn't care. But I'm seeing more of that. And then nonprofit coalitions are being talked about and discussed the foundation of groups that would be the nonprofits who advocate here in Arkansas, and they are across the spectrum, but saying, how can we as nonprofits that care about these things get together so that we can find the broadest amount of policy that we can work on together, use our relationships to help advance things that we all care about. So bipartisan legislators, we're starting to see more of them. They're willing to do that work. Bipartisan legislation is happening. Nonprofits are starting to collaborate a little more together.
Well, you provided lots of examples. I appreciate that. We'll get into some other examples as we move forward.
Yeah, and it occurs to me what you were saying is something I've noticed too. You know, there's been polarization between the parties, and that's what Braver Angels came together to try to address, but I've noticed the same thing, polarization within both parties. So it strikes me that it would be helpful if both parties would maybe have someone like Braver Angels or that kind of approach to get people who are on theoretically the same team to talk with each other and find some common ground, because that's what it's all about, is finding the common ground so you can solve problems by saying, okay, we can agree upon this, let's do something about that. It kind of makes me think that, wouldn't it be great, and maybe that's too much to ask for, but maybe it will head in that direction of having a coalition or a caucus in the legislature of people who are both moderate and principled on both sides to get together to solve problems and to enact legislation and leave the folks on the extremes on both sides out if they're not going to be helpful in that role. So
that is an approach that I think is needed, and it's not to the exclusion of those that, you know, like you're saying, that if you're willing to participate in this, you can be on any side of it, and as extreme down the left or the right as you would like.
That's true,
because I think all those voices need to be heard, and I'm not correcting you by any means on that, Glenn. It's just
I agree with you.
you know, and I think there's some examples we can talk about to where the further the left and the further the right have come around in a horseshoe fashion to be on yep. the same side about some things. And I think there's policy yeah. we can talk about recently here in Arkansas where that's an example.
Well, let's take a brief break here, Glenn, and we'll be coming back with our guest, Ryan Norris.
April, I did want to break in a moment here in our conversation with Ryan with an observation. I had mentioned the idea of moderates on both sides working together to get things done. And Ryan rightly noted that we should include everyone, even those with more extreme views, as long as they are willing to be respectful in those discussions. And I think he was absolutely correct about that. As soon as he said it, I knew it was right. And in fact, that thinking is very much in line with the Braver Angels philosophy. Basically, we welcome conversations from anyone with any particular ideology, as long as the discussion is respectful and civil. Hopefully, in doing that, it allows for some compromise because we find some common ground occasionally that way. So I appreciate Ryan's point, and I stand corrected on that. I will say that I think when I made those initial comments about moderates coming together, the implication was clear that that excluded people with extreme views from the conversation, and that's not necessarily what we want. Understand, I was thinking of the research that I'm aware of that shows many people with extremities of views on both sides tend to be rigid, discount the other side, and have a number of other negative attributes. Now, that's true of extremists as a group, but the truth is that not everyone with extreme views is that way. It is even reasonable to expect, in my mind, that occasionally someone with what's considered an extreme view, they may just be kind of ahead of the curve. They might be right about something that just hasn't reached the point of people accepting it as a legitimate option. So bottom line, the key is to bring everyone into conversation as long as those participants in that conversation are willing to commit to remaining civil and respectful. Because basically, the more ideas we throw in the mix, the better the eventual compromise. That's my thinking.
Glenn, I really appreciate that you thought about this because I do agree with where you're coming to in terms of what you're talking about here. And I do know, though, that it's very difficult when we are encountering people who are coming at us with what we consider to be an extreme view, especially if they are extreme in a way that seems like it's threatening our own identity or our own personhood or our own right to exist. And I think that's just a very difficult place to be. I remember Monica Guzman, when she came to the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, and part of her book on I Never Thought of It That Way, one of the questions she was asked was, is there a red line that you draw in the sand where if a person crosses that, you aren't willing to have a conversation with them? And she thought about it, and she said actually that she's been asked that quite a bit, and she has not changed her mind in terms of what she says, as she has really come to embrace intellectual humility and curiosity. And she basically said, no, there's not. If I can see them as a human being worthy of existence, then I can have a conversation with them where I'm able to try to take their perspective, not agree with it necessarily at all, but at least be curious about why it is that they're coming at something from a particular perspective. The other thing that I would add to what you just said is that I think it's really important that we recognize that when a person is an extreme on one issue, that doesn't mean that they're extremist on everything. And many times we can find things that we have in common with them if we sit and listen and hear their stories and see them as a human being and begin to understand where they're coming from. So thank you for sharing that. I really appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate your thoughts too. That's good. It just kind of reminds us once again that what we're advocating in Braver Angels is not easy, and it can be a little scary. So I guess it fits the notion of Braver Angels. It takes some courage, but if you'll stick to it, then you can find things working out better than you might have thought at first. And so I appreciate what you've had to say.
Absolutely.
I tell you what, let's get back to our conversation with Ryan.
Sounds good. Welcome back to our interview with today's guest, Ryan Norris.
I had heard that you and Americans for Prosperity were involved in the spring regular session of the legislature here in Arkansas, and you that was when they were working on the LEARNS Act, and that you guys were involved in some fashion. Now, as most people know, the LEARNS Act resulted in several changes in how Arkansas is going to approach public education. One thing it did, I think most people were happy with, was the teachers' raises. Another key part was providing public funding via vouchers for parents that could use that money to enroll their children in private or parochial schools if they wished to do so. Those are two key elements, but there were some other things as well. And they're not without controversy there, but at any rate, for now, yeah, I understand you were able to get some grassroots input and have some influence on the outcome of the legislation. So I wonder if you could kind of give us a little summary of what you and Americans for Prosperity did in that regard.
Yes. You know, primarily our input was around the advocacy components and fostering dialogue with the various stakeholders in Arkansas. And the LEARNS bill was a large bill, 144 pages. Many people talk about, you know, did they or did that person or did that person not read all the bill? Well, I will tell you that I did read every line, even the strike through sections. So, you know, that was kind of advocating for the education choice components and bringing in the things that we had learned also from teachers groups, from families. You know, the conversation around LEARNS has been decades old, not around the policies that ended up being in LEARNS. Some of them are decades old, and AFP has been around for about 12 years, and we've been involved in those conversations. But educating citizens and policymakers is kind of the number one primary thing that we did is, you know, here, what are the options that you need? And here's some ideas. And then here are the options that people want, and here are some ideas. And then just raising that awareness. And then candidate education, when we found out that there was an increase, particularly post-COVID, when families were really getting involved in a child's education, with some dissatisfaction with the education systems, there was an increase in those parents who wanted different sets of choices. So we educated voters about candidates and who held to education choice policies and said that that's what they were going to run on, and those, you know, those that weren't. So that was another component that we participated in. Then facilitating a policy working group, we actually facilitated with the Rockefeller Institute, and then another group called Yes Every Kid that works in education policy, that's part of our broader network, to pull together the stakeholders from across the spectrum with the goal of finding the broadest amount of policy that we could agree on and move forward. Because just like in that scenario where we talked about, you know, the extremes, if we could each put our heels to die on aside, we could probably find a body of policy that was 60% or 80% that we could agree on. And that was the initial aim of that project, and still is. In fact, they're meeting today at Pettigean Mountain. Still, the work continues on this, in finding out how we can improve education even more. And there, in this, we had the Arkansas Department of Education, the Arkansas Association of Educational Administrators, Arkansas Education Association. I mean, these are not slouch groups. These are groups that know what they're talking about when it comes to education. So that set us up to building consensus around many of the policies. The ideas of, you know, in greater investments in literacy, teacher salary increases, transportation, pre-kindergarten education, these all made their way into the LEARNS bill. And so it's one of these scenarios to where you can get 90% of what you want, be upset with 10%, you know, and that's kind of the politics of it. Again, I understand that. But in general, it's a win for the stakeholders. You know, that's how collaboration and consensus kind of works. Everybody kind of gets a little bit of kind of what they want. So educating citizens and policymakers, educating on the candidates that are supporting those policies, putting together broad stakeholder working groups, trying to build that consensus to where, hey, what can I do? And I had this with, I won't say who necessarily, but a high level individual from one of the other associations. And my question was, what can I do to alleviate your fears about this particular policy? And they gave me some ideas that we then shared and kind of worked through some things that, you know, they ended up in the Learns Bill. So that's kind of the fun of what I like is I like to understand why someone has an opposition and try to help that, you know, help them with that. Or maybe there's just a little nuance that we need to make. A change of a word in law, in the, you know, in the code can, or the bill can change the meaning of it, which takes away the fear of it. And so that was kind of how we contributed, was in those different ways.
Okay. You've mentioned that the Learns Act wound up having a lot of good things that a lot of people agreed with. And I think that's accurate that most people acknowledge that was the case. I think the vouchers issue is the biggest controversy. And the interesting thing about that is that it wasn't breaking down entirely by partisanship. There were people, like, for instance, I understand there's a lot of concern on from the rural end of things. Rural areas were concerned about the impact on, you know, their ability to get their kids educated if there weren't much in the way of, you know, private or parochial school options for them. So, I think we haven't heard the last on it, but I wonder if you could comment, you know, given that any kind of compromise legislation comes up with some good things, but still leaves some things that people may have concerns about. What can we do as everyday citizens to learn more about what's going on and how we can get involved in the future? To many, it may seem as just, well, the politicians are at it again. They do their thing. They don't care what they think. And I think there is a chance that people can influence the outcome. What would you tell people who have that kind of thinking?
Yeah, well, I would argue that Learns is that outcome, that the people did participate in this. You hear over and over from elected officials that I vote my district because they know what's going to get them elected and what's going to keep them elected. And so when you're looking at 78% of the House, 78 out of 100, and 28 out of 35 members in the Senate voted for it, they did that thinking that was the safest bet because that's what their district wanted to home. So the way that this works, though, is that's not an overnight phenomenon. That is, again, decades worth of conversation and of working to educate about the benefits of all these components that were in Learns, obviously, some a little less controversial than others, as you pointed out. But number one is if you want to have this impact, and this is kind of my formula that I use, is you need to access the information as early as possible, and it's easily accessible now. You can learn about policy and policy positions more easily than ever before. There's nonprofit public policy groups like Americans for Prosperity out there that are educating about these issues, and it could be on any side of the issue. The one that resonates with you, you're going to probably have a nonprofit that's supporting that position, and you can learn more about why that's right, what the trade-offs are, those kind of things. So accessing the information, engage in the legislative process. Again, this is also easy. Legislative proceedings are now live streamed in general, mostly, and you can access that. You can also go to websites in Arkansas and track where the bill is and who's voting for it. And you can sign up to speak if you would like. And, you know, we actually organized testimony for citizens who felt a little anxious about going down there and speaking. We actually created a whole class around, here's how you constructively communicate with legislators when you're sitting down there at the table, to where they'll be potentially open-minded to your point of view. And here's how to, how to address them. This is how to, this is what you're going to experience, et cetera, kind of tamp that down. So engaging with that legislative process, participate in nonpartisan, you know, in nonprofit advocacy. Nonprofit advocates groups play a crucial role. And I like to think that we had a lift in the Learns Bill. We have those that have pointed out that they feel like maybe we had too much of a lift. But, you know, that is where we have freedom of speech, freedom of association, and the ability to have the marketplace of ideas to where we can put them out there and see which ones resonate with the people. And there are nonprofits that you can get involved as involved with. I hope it would be Americans for Prosperity. I'd be, you know, wouldn't be representing myself if I didn't say that component and advocate for myself on that. But there are plenty of good faith groups that are on the opposite side of issues from us that I have. I would prefer them to be my counterbalance. They're good people. They're well-intentioned, and we can have constructive conversations. So participating in nonprofit advocacy, vote for the informed candidates, the candidate that you think is going to support your position. And you have that opportunity. And then building these coalitions is another key component. If your little group and another little group can get together, that's how you win in politics, is you bring more people to your side than the opposition has on their side. And so building those coalitions. And then this is the big one. Here's the one that I think is the catcher. Stay persistent. Like I said, this has been over 20 years that the most controversial components of LEARNS has been discussed in the state of Arkansas. It's been brought up over and over and over and over and over and over and over. Well, persistence paid off. I would point that in the same arguments against the controversial points of LEARNS were brought up in 2021 around the philanthropic scholarship, the tax credit scholarship. You donate money, you get a tax write-off for you individually or for a corporation, and those monies would then be used for private school education tuition. That passed by a vote of 52 in the House, and it was a lot of work to get two votes. But now a bill that goes even further than that in the span of a two-year period, because of persistence, because of doing all of these things, won by 78% in the House. That's a big difference, but you have to stay persistent. You can't let up. So Americans for Prosperity has some advantage. That may be the wrong way to put it, but our strategy is to have a 365-day operation in the state of Arkansas. We're always talking. We're always building. We're always talking to citizens. We're talking to coalition partners. We're talking with our opposition. We're finding like, hey, what's the trade-off? You know, if this is what we want and that's what you want, we're cool with this component. Are you cool with this component? And you build that out. So stay persistent and don't give up on that. And I think that LEARN shows how AFP and those that proponents of LEARNS, that's where it kind of paid off in a big way.
There's one thing I want to kind of go back and just kind of inquire briefly. And it's, you said that, if, as I understand it, AFP will offer training to citizens on how to interact with the legislature and advocate for their, you know, their causes. And I was wondering if there are any particular criteria for who you provide training, like could anyone get that?
Yep. Well, at the major training that we had, Glenn, we had infiltrators of those that didn't like LEARNS, and we trained them up. And some of the worst things that they said about us was they were really nice people and they seemed to care about their kids, you know, and that's so no, there isn't. There isn't that.
Good.
We're open to anybody.
Good. Do you know of any kind of blue hued nonprofits and groups that offer similar kinds of training or others you just suggest for people who kind of sway that way?
You know, I believe the Public Policy Panel and Citizens First Congress will have those kind of trainings. Depending on, there are those that are a little more focused, like on criminal justice reform, Decarcerate. Works on criminal justice reform, and Zach Crowe and his team have trainings if that's what you're interested in. And you know, for everyone that's working on policy with AFP, and it could be healthcare policy, immigration policy, whatever it is, we're always open to training anyone. There's no particular litmus test. If you're interested in helping advance it, we'll train you. And then obviously, we don't even vet that well, and we can have those that would be opposed to us who we will train you as well.
Well, good for you, because I think in the end, it makes for better citizens and that makes for a better outcome. Good for
you. Yes.
Where would people find out about this training?
Well, we are Most easily, it go to believeinar.com. believeinar.com, and that's our main site. And you can click on the contact us button. And if you're interested in trainings, let us know. We provide them totally free. If your organization is interested in learning how, you know, we also have how to talk across the spectrum. We have how to talk policy without starting a fight. We have how to talk to your legislator, how to talk, how to testify. We even have grassroots training for if you're a citizen that really wants to get involved, how to develop your own message first, how to be a advocate, and then how to work with other advocates. And then eventually how to create an advocate campaign. We've had individuals come in, take those three levels of courses and walk out the door, implement them, and create change at their city level or at their county level and run for higher office even.
I'm familiar with some of those trainings to the Grassroots Leadership Academy because you guys were doing some of them to try to see if we could adapt them for training for Braver Angels volunteers at the national level. So I really found them to be helpful when I went through some of them. So I appreciate the work that you're doing and that it's to help all citizens actually get involved.
Well, April, that's all we're going to talk about for the moment, but we do have a number of things that we still want to get into with Ryan. So make sure we all stay tuned for the second part of our conversation with Ryan Norris.
Well, thanks to our listeners today for joining us on today's edition of On the Other Hand. This was the first part of our conversation with Ryan Norris, and we encourage folks to check out the second part of this conversation with Ryan, as well as other podcast episodes of On the Other Hand. You can find us on the podcast page of the Braver Angels Arkansas website, and that's at arkansas.braverangels.org or on many popular podcast sites.
And when you visit our website, we'll have links to all our episodes, but you can also find a link where you can email us at otherhandar@gmail.com. And you can use that to provide us with feedback about our programs, suggested speakers, and the like. So again, that email is otherhandar@gmail.com.
On the Other Hand is sponsored by Braver Angels in Arkansas. Music was composed by Randall Standridge of Jonesboro and was performed by the University of Northern Colorado Symphonic Band, Dr. Richard Main, conductor.
From your host, Glenn White.
And April Chatham Carpenter.
Let's all do our parts to bring our community closer together.